accession number 22077, reel 15.
Well, that was the. I'm sorry, that was the general idea. I said, well, it's funny that the other chaps didn't have any choice either, but they didn't do it, did they? You know, this was the sort of thing that was happening. And I felt very guilty because I hadn't been in the war, if you understand me. So I didn't know, I really didn't know what it was all about. I mean, I'd done my war in another place, but.
What did you feel about? I suppose they haven't really committed treason.
None at all,
done
no.
Things that have caused anyone to die. I mean, they just.
I don't think anything happened to only one man, as far as I remember, out of the people that we interviewed, that only one man was charged with anything, because it was considered that it was one of those things you either did or you didn't. You were either brave enough to do not, or you did it. Yeah. I think that's how it went, because we never heard any more about it afterwards. No.
Did any of them feel guilty?
I don't think they did.
No.
I don't think they did. I don't think they did. Not, by the way, when the ones I interviewed, and I think my major would have said the same. Mm. In fact, it wasn't a very nice... For me, it wasn't a good job. I didn't want that at all. Mm. And when we came back to Japan, shortly afterwards, I received a telephone call, and... I said, yes, who's that speaking? It's RSM Hobbs of the Gloucester Regiment. I couldn't believe me luck. He said, who's that? I said, well, you know me as Boy Metcalf, 518-0211. He said, bloody hell, I can remember the very words he said to me. He said, what are you doing there, Mick? I said, well, I'm in the military police. He said, well, that's good. He said, what I'd like to ask, can you get me a peat cap for my drum major bus? I said, well, of course I can. He said, I'll come and fetch it. And he came over from where he was, now in Japan, for their camp at Ebisu, to my place. And, oh, we had a lovely time. Oh, it was wonderful. Dear old Jack, he taught me to play my instrument, to throw the discus, javelin. He was a wonderful man. He became a captain after, but...
I'm going to stop you just there.
Yeah.
Harold Morris Metcalf, end of reel 14. Harold Morris Metcalf, reel 15. So how long were you in Korea altogether?
I was a month. Uh-huh. And I went back for 10 days, and I went back for 14 days, and I went back for 14 days to relieve my officers.
Right.
So that they could have R&R
but
in
you
Japan.
Were, you
I wasn't
Korea,
stationed there. I was
yes,
in Japan.
Japan. Whereabouts?
Yeah. Kure, the big dock. At the base of
right.
Japan.
That's spelled
K-U-R-E, Kure.
Right. So you were... Where, you were still... You were 90 section SIB.
No, I'm now... I'm now... Far Eastern Land Forces SIB. Headquarters. HQ Land Forces... Far East Land Forces SIB. Stationed in Kure, mm-hmm. at a little camp, which had a church and a prison and barracks for soldiers, that's all.
Did you feel like going to Japan? I mean, you fought the Japanese, haven't you?
Well, can I put it this way? I hated them, mm-hmm. and I didn't know what to do. When I was going there, my wife and my mother... My mother was very upset. She didn't know because we lost all our home and the little bastard. You know what I'm talking about.
Harold Morris Metcalf, Reel 15.
Days to relieve my... I want to stay...
That's felt. You were still...
And now... Forces at and a prison and barracks for soldiers, that's all.
Most so what of did you feel like going to Japan? I mean, you fought the Japanese, haven't you?
Well, so. Could I put it this way? I hated them and I didn't know what to do. When I was going there, my wife and my mother were very upset. So I wasn't very pleased about it. Having said that, we came back I'm sorry, I've gone ahead a bit. I had a staff sergeant and he had been a prisoner of war. Yes. And when we came back to Japan from Korea, because he stayed with me for the time I was there. We got to Korea, and a bloke came to Japan, and a chap came to pick up his baggage. He was a Japanese man, and he smacked straight in the clock. That was it. He hit it. And of course, he was sent straight back to Korea. They didn't want to make an issue of it, but he never stayed. He married a Japanese girl later on. I'm not joking, three of us. But, you know, you can't believe this, really. It's a funny old world. Anyway, I went that night. Hero. All the men had come back. Colonel Karn was there. And Jacob said to me, come on, Nick, I'll take you up to see the colonel. And he said, excuse me, sir, you're not going to believe this, but this is RSM Metcalf for the Special Investigation Branch. He used to be your drum major, middleweight, but I don't believe it, said Fred Karn. And I said, it's me, sir. And he said, Metcalf, he couldn't see. You know that. His eyes were not come back to normal. He said, Metcalf, if it's you, you can sing me the ruddy song from the White Horse Inn you used to sing every Wednesday night at the mess. And I sang, my heart is broken, but what care I? And I sang this goodbye song, and he came up and hugged me, and he said, it is you. We had a long chat. I met him twice after, but I had a wonderful evening with him. Well, it was wonderful. And Drummy Bus, of course, I'd been the drum major beforehand. He was a wonderful chap. He died last year. And he was the one who blew all the bugle calls when they had to retreat that time from Korea. So I had a wonderful evening there. And I settled down quite well in Japan. Now, can I say this? It was a British Commonwealth Forces special branch. I had five Canadian sergeants, five New Zealanders, five Australians, and six British. Okay, I had a big section. And there was a lot of work to be done, by the way. Having said that, my Major Warman, he was a good chap, Dickie Warman. And the lieutenant who was over the other side, he was pretty good too. And There was another major sent eventually over to Korea to take over from this lieutenant, whom Mason, his name was. They always called him Perry Mason, like the detective in the story. I better not talk about that for the moment, because there were all sorts of problems in Japan. I didn't do so many inquiries because I was a man who had to do the jobs and say, right, you go here, you go there. But when I arrived there, the night I arrived in Japan, I went to the mess, and you should have seen it. Oh, God, it was awful. Lovely place, but no one had been looking after it, obviously. The sergeant major had been there, and fortunately, I clicked on the right sergeant from the Canadian Army, and I said, can you come with me a moment? And I said, what happens here? He said, what do you mean, sir? I said, well, they're a scruffy lot of buggers. I said, this won't do for me. And he said, oh, they're always like this. I said, my major won't have this, Dickie Warman, and I knew he wouldn't. So I said, what can I do? He said, well, I said, I know what I want to do. I said, but I don't want to rub anybody's hackles up the first day I'm here. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, sir. He said, get them all together in your room. And I had a room of my own, you know, little place about this size, my bunk. And I got the chaps in. They were all smoking. And I said, well, I'm the new RSM here. I said, and I'm from the British Army. I'm a regular soldier. I'm not a wartime man. I've been in the army all these years, and I don't like the state of affairs. There was a sort of a little bit of rumbling for a minute. I said, I don't want to start to try and get on top of you, because I don't know any of you. But if my major sees your barracks, your rooms, as they are now, it won't happen again ever. You'll all be sent back to your outfits. And I knew it was true. And one bloke said, are you joking, mate? And I said, I'm not mate, I'm sir. Well, they eventually caught on. And by the time I left them, I bought them all a drink, and we were settled down pretty well. I didn't get on with all the chaps, but quite a lot of them backed me with these other fellows who weren't a bit bolshy. Eventually, the section was wonderful, but it took a time, because Dickie Warman was, he lighted everything in its place, right spit, and you had to wear your uniform in Korea and in Japan, no civvies, only after hours, and then you had a special pass, which I still have. And, well, the jobs came in rather thick and fast.
So and you were again policing the Commonwealth forces that were
stationed in
Japan.
That's right.
Were they sort of governing or not controlling Japan at that
everything.
Time?
We were in charge. Right. We were in charge. And the Kripo used to answer to us.
Right.
You know, the Kempeitai, as they were. They're not Kripo. Kempeitai. And we got on reasonably well with them. In fact, I have somewhere in my archives upstairs, I have a book, a folder they presented me one Christmas, all in Japanese. But someone interpreted it for me, wishing all our chaps good times and holly Christmas and all that. They were very nice. I got on reasonably well. Don't get me wrong, I didn't like them. But I did get to like them. I told you I was a Salvationist and I was quite religious. And my captain, the Canadian captain, his house girl, his Japanese house girl, was a Japanese Salvationist. And she found out that I was a Salvationist. And she said to me, very haltingly, she spoke reasonably English, Metcalf-san, you come me church Sunday? And I thought, I said, where you go? She said, oh, Salvation Army, like you. So I thought, well, I'll go. I went. And, well, it was just like any other Salvation Army, but it was all in Japanese. I'd only just got there. I didn't know a word except Ohio in the morning, good morning. And it was really funny, I'm not joking. And they gave me this book. It was what they called Hepburn Japanese, phonetically Japanese words, you know? And I knew the hymns, but some of them I didn't know. But they sang, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. I got it in there. I sang it to my wife's patients where my wife goes to day centre. I sang it to them yesterday. They thought it was very funny. And I was singing lustily. I thought it was wonderful. But then I had to give a testimony, which you do at Tommy. And I found it very difficult because I had to do through AECO. And when we came out, they were all clapping like they do. And I came out and I thoroughly enjoyed myself. But the major, the Japanese Salvation Army major, we spoke for a while, and she said, the girl said to me, he wants to give you a present, Metcalf-san. So he took me round the back of his little enclave, there he was, and behind this curtain he said, you like this? And it was a samurai sword. This is a samurai sword. And I couldn't believe me luck. I said, how you come? He said, oh, never mind, I have it from Officer Man. So I took it back to barracks. But I won't tell you about that for a moment. The next day, Shizui Takahashi, her name was, she came to me. She said, Megao-san, I don't think you go that my church again. You come to my chaplain's church on Sunday. All other denominations, she's telling me. You know, it was OD church. And I went there. And this is how I think God works in a wonderful way. I went there on that Sunday evening, had a wonderful time. All our troops, all who were under denoms, were there, and lots of Japanese people. And I still didn't like Japanese people, by the way. And the minister, an Australian minister, chaplain, a major he was, and he said, it's with great regret that I have to say that our choir master is leaving us. He's been with us for 4 years, and he's going home tomorrow. Is there any musicians out there who would like to take the choir over? And I went out and offered my services. And he was delighted. I told my major, and he said, well, when you can, you go. I found quite time, lots of time to go, because I was in the position where I could pass lots of things on to my sergeant major, you know. And if it was choir practice and there was nothing special on, I went. Oh, I had a wonderful time. They were nearly all Japanese girls. Well, I mean, all the girls were Japanese. And I had Australians, Canadians, etc., etc. Two nurses from Australia, one with whom we correspond. We've met her while we went over to visit her. And her husband, he was a doctor there. She was a lovely girl. Anyway, I took this choir and we went to a place called... the name's gone from me for a moment, but they had a large music festival there, and we went to sing. I took my choir over there to sing. I have pictures of them. Oh, it was lovely. It really was. I had a wonderful time with them. And also, I had a lot of work. Mm. I had a lot
so
of work.
What sort of work was it? What was the different character of crime to what you
Yes, altogether. Mostly, how can I put it? Quite a lot of rape, quite a lot, and that was one thing that upset me towards the end. But there was no need for it at all, not in my mind. You could almost buy a girl for a bar of chocolate, you know, of that type. And Dusan-chomi, that's 13 district, Dusan-chomi was the area, the brothel area. And if you wanted a girl, you could go down and get one, you know. And they were all inspected by... Incidentally, they were all inspected by the military to see that they were clean.
Yes.
Otherwise, they were chucked out. So,
but still, there was rape.
There was an awful lot of rape.
Was there a sort of grudge against the Japanese, you know, that were taking it out on the girls, but against the Japanese nation for the way they'd fought the war?
I wonder. After all these years, I never thought about that, dear. No.
A sort of disrespect.
I know what you mean. Yes. Yes. I could well understand it, by the way, but it never struck me that way. Criminally-wise, it never struck me that way, you know, because we used to get two or three a week.
Really?
Oh, yes.
So much more than you got in Brussels
much
or
more.
Germany.
And yes, there was much in Germany, but you could buy a girl for a packet of fags in Germany. So. Mm. But it was rife. Mm. And in Japan, it used to upset me. Having gone to this church, I got to know these Japanese girls. I used to go to meetings, and there's a little crippled boy picture over there. He's a lovely man. He writes to me every year. Last year he wrote to me in Japanese, And I had an awful job to decide. I've got a book upstairs. And he said, when you write back Metcalf-san, you write Japanese. So I wrote hiragana, which is very simple Japanese. He wrote back and said he didn't think much of it. But he was a little cripple boy. He used to sing in my choir. When we went back with my family, she thought he was a lovely little chap. But we've corresponded ever since. But it was mostly, most offences were against the Japanese.
Really?
Yeah? Yeah. Rape. Burglary, if they could make it. Mm-hmm. Some blokes did and got away with it. We also had trouble with ships coming in. I would like to quote just one case. There had been a lot of trouble on a ship, apparently. I didn't know about this, till the man's body was found in the water. You understand me? An Englishman.
Oh, right. Sorry, this is one particular ship.
Pardon?
This is one particular ship.
One of our ships coming out. Yes, coming out. One of them, we used to see an awful lot of ships coming to Kure at the time.
So there was trouble on board.
Yes.
And the body was...
Right. Well, I didn't know what... We didn't know it first, you understand. The body... Anyway, I went down with my major to start with, and the ship's captain, he said, I have a lot of Lascar lads on my ship. He said, and they don't seem to know what happened. Anyway, when this man was brought out, he had a huge mark on his head, which he could have done falling over the side, you know what I mean. Anyway, we interviewed quite a lot of people and got nothing. And then, towards the end of the day, one Lascar man came up and he said, I speak you, and off he went in Urdu. I got another person who could translate for me, and this man said, this English man had been fighting and came aboard drunky, and they fought up here. Another English man, and he hit him, and he fell over. That's what happened. That put a different complex on everything. My major said, oh, Christ, looks like we got a murder on our hands, you know. Anyway, this man was interviewed, and there was a bit of a problem about it. They didn't know quite what to do about it. So we had to take statements and send it back to the War Office. Although he was a civilian. Yeah. In England. And the next day I was on a court-martial for something else. I say this because it's very relevant. My major and I went up there, and we were waiting for this court-martial to commence when the judge advocate general came, Major John Wheater, and he was DLS, we called them, the legal assistance people. And we were talking outside, and John Wheater said, I can't understand these bloody petty criminals, you know, this legal bloke. He said, if ever I went into crime, I'd go in for it in a big way. That's what he said. I say this because many years later, there was a thing called the Great Train Robbery, and Biggs was one of the men in the Great Train Robbery, yes? But who was the man who got the farm for them, where they stacked all their goods? Mr. John Wheater, Major John Wheater. You can't believe this, can you? I mean, I was out in the army, but no, I don't know when I was out in the army at the time, but I know wherever I was, I got a call from my major, Warman. He said, have you seen the bloody papers today, Major John Wheater? He said, remember when he said if ever he went in for crime? And he didn't really know much about it, really, but he got 2 years. But that, I thought that's... And really, I had very little work to do, I'm saying, myself. I was in charge of a section. I had to answer to my major, and he had to answer to the provost marshal. And the assistant provost marshal there, his boy was schooling out there, and he came down to me one day, the APM, Major Hudson, Colonel Hudson, and he said, Metcalf, I believe you go swimming at Karuga. I said, yes, sir, every time I get the chance. He said, could you teach my lad to swim? You're only a young schoolboy. I said, yeah, I'd be delighted. So he and another boy, whose father was in the forces, used to come with me twice a week to this place at Karuga Beach. They had a beautiful swimming bath, and I taught them both to swim. And Major Hudson was a very nice... Colonel Hudson was a nice man. The time came when I was told I was going to be posted to a place called Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is going to be great. I should love that. Anyway, had a tearful farewell with all the girls in the choir. They made me a record, which I have upstairs somewhere, singing my favourite hymn. Incidentally, we did a concert at this big place, and it was well received. And by this time, I got to like many Japanese people. I still had a lurking suspicion in my heart about them, because Major Warman's boy, who used to do all his work, had been a major in the Japanese army, and he was the softest bloke you ever came across, you would think.
Yeah.
Yes. When we heard what the things he had done, and I wasn't surprised, because they could be, I can't say what I mean, they were such nice people. I couldn't believe they could do the things they did. But it was at Bushido, it's their way they lived. That was their life. I blame the Germans more, because they were like us, you know, and they did more terrible things that I thought it was... That always upset me, because the Japanese, it was their way of life. They treated their men just the same as they treated our men, by the way. And anyway, I...
How long were you in Japan?
I was in Japan from 18 months, was it? Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, I got there, but it wasn't a long station, actually.
Mm-hmm. So you went there...
Far East Land Force, in 53, and I came in 54... 19 months I was there,
yeah.
Then I was posted to Hong Kong.
Right.
And when I got to Hong Kong, I was taken to the barracks in Nathan Road. Mm-hmm. I've forgotten the name of the barracks at the moment, but when I went there a short while ago, it's the biggest mosque I've ever seen, my office used to be. But I went there and I met this chap, Captain Kench, and the RSM who was leaving said, "You won't get on with him, Mick. He's a right bar steward," he said. And I remember I had been swimming and I had an infection in my ear. And when I got there, I had a huge piece of cotton wool, miles of it, and I had no more swimming for a while. But when I got there, I wasn't feeling very well. And I was placed in this bunk and... I slept all night. I was not feeling at all bright that particular night. And they had a typhoon. And when I woke up in the morning, I had no roof to this house where I was, in my bunk. And there was a huge... Oh, I got killed. I didn't get killed. I don't know. There was a huge tree right across my bed.
And you hadn't heard it?
No, not a thing.
You'd been sleeping on that
side. I was out, right out. And... Captain Kench came in the morning and he said, "What the hell's on here?" The barracks were in a pretty bad state, by the way, but they weren't. I mean, my bunk, I was very lucky, I suppose. First ruddy night in Hong Kong. And Captain Kench said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "Well, I'll go and see the sick bay first." I went to sick bay and they said, "You'll have to stay in bed for 3 days, Mr. Metcalf." Well, I didn't stay in bed. I went into the bazaar. And I wanted to buy my wife. We had a friend in Burma who had two most beautiful Bali heads. Black, jet black. They were lovely. They were like that one, that, you know, black like that. And I couldn't find a black one, so I saw two. There they are over there.
Yeah.
That man and that lady. But they were, I mean, they weren't like that when I got them. I spent all day spitting polish in those two. And when Kench came in the morning, he said, "What did you do all day yesterday?" I said, "Well, actually, I was rubbing the lady's breasts." I can see his face now, because there she is over there. And but we settled down, Hong Kong. My wife came out just before Christmas. In fact, Christmas Day.
54.
They arrived Christmas Day. And I went down with the boss, and I saw these people waving to people, and I couldn't see my good lady anywhere. And then suddenly I saw... a lady with two children, and they kept waving, and she, her hair was almost white, and my wife's hair was jet black when I'd left home. You know, I'd only been out there in, 19 months or so. I couldn't believe it, and it was Julian. It upset me, I'll tell you. I said, my God, that's my wife there. Of course, we had a lovely time together. We went to our hotel where we had no quarter at the time. And we had a Chinese meal. She had to get used to that very quickly because it was lovely. And my children, it was great. It was lovely that first night together. And then they settled down to get a quarter for us. We got a quarter at a place called Jubilee Buildings at Sham Shui Po. Was then married quarters. Right on the edge of the city and right on the edge of the water. And had a special place, RSM's quarter. My wife went straight into teaching straight away. They wanted a teacher at the school, and she went straight into teaching there, which was a great help.